Welcome back to the Petrospective. Thank you once more for pressing play on Rock. I am Lindsay Hall.
And I am Dave Hall.
And I am grateful that you are back listening to us. It's been a little while, and we appreciate you sticking around and waiting for us to come back at you with this one tonight. But Dave, let me ask you a question. How are you feeling?
Lindsay, I'm all fired up.
Nice.
I'm all fired up. There's a flame burning in my soul. My heart, it's a burning coal. Oh my goodness. No, I'm so, this is good. It's good to be back. Thank you, everyone. We do apologize for the delay in getting back to recording this one. For those of you who may not be aware, obviously COVID hits our world quite hard, but where we live in Australia has been significantly hit by some COVID lockdowns in the last few weeks. And that's just made it a little bit harder for us to get into a position where we could record again, but we're back. We're ready to rock and roll. We are so grateful. In fact, I've been really impressed. I don't know, Lindsay, if you've been picking up, but there's been a lot more people who've been hooking into the On Fire Petrospective Facebook page. We thank you so much for liking us and sharing us. And obviously our listening audience out there is growing, and we really appreciate every single one of you who shares the love of Petra and the love of this amazing ministry that has changed all of us, has ministered to our hearts and our spirits. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen to our thoughts on these albums. So, yeah.
Absolutely. That you guys get enthusiastic about this keeps us enthusiastic about this. So right off the bat.
Not that it's hard for us to stay enthusiastic about this.
True, very true, particularly when we get to albums like the one we're talking about tonight, David. There's a strong response to this album, stronger, I think, than there was to This Means War, which surprises me a little bit. But when it comes down to people kind of holding up the iconic Petra album, it seems there's quite a strong argument to be made for this album.
I think this album marks a real massive shift for the band in a lot of ways, both musically and culturally. I think there were some massive changes that were evident at the time On Fire was released, or linked to the release of On Fire. And I think that is part of why it has such a wide acceptance and love. Is because this album took things to a new level for the band. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as we go through this journey today and share a little bit about what was happening for the band as they toured with this album. Also, we're clearly going to be talking about the some of the musical changes that were very evident on this album. This to me is where the modern Petra really clicked in. It's sort of like they really found their groove, and it's this is sort of the style and sound that pretty much takes it through for the next few albums, pretty much until Bob Hartman stopped touring with the band, and we'll get to that down the track. But you know, the sound that comes out here is a dominant sound for a few albums now.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Dave. Before we get too deep into that, David, your Petra origin story, we know that it all began with This Means War. We were talking about last time, but where does On Fire enter into the Dave narrative?
All right. So as we all know, 1988 was when I received the This Means War album for my birthday. I got the On Fire album in 1989 for my birthday. So my 13th birthday, this album was only a few months old at this point, released in late 1988. So I was right on track. I got this album for my birthday. Oh my, did it get lots of listening to, and it really became a long-term mainstay in the tape and music collection that would go through the car cassette player quite a lot. think I burned through, I think I ended up having to re-record, recopy this tape off my record because played it so much it died and I needed a new one.
It's interesting. There are songs off this album that I always have a memory of that go back to the very beginning for me. And I know that they've always been there. However, something in my head used to conflate On Fire with This Means War. Something about them, my head kind of skipped over the fact that On Fire was its own album. I don't know why. It's the one for the longest time. On Fire was the forgotten Petra album for me. That's not the case anymore. And almost with a vengeance, it's come back because it is an album very much with its own identity and its own sound and place in the discography.
But Dave, it's interesting that you say that though, because even Bob Hartman in the On Fire, in the More Power to You Petrospective, he calls this album the follow-up, the sequel to This Means War, in the same way he viewed Not of This World, the sequel to More Power to You. So to link the two albums together, I don't think is a wrong thought process, because it was in the mind of the great founder and songwriter for Petra, Bob Hartman, saw this as a sequel. And I think where you may have struggled with discerning the two apart is I was taught when you have a 60-minute tape, you record your album onto it, but you don't leave all this nothingness at the end of the last song on the album. I was always taught to fill the rest of the cassette. And so it is more than likely that I put songs from On Fire on the back end of the This Means War tape. So that's probably where you had your feeling that they blended together, because they probably did on the cassette that we listened to.
You're probably very true there. And the fact is, it's the first four songs off the album that are the ones that feature strongly in my memory. Other ones come in because they featured on best ofs in later years. But look, I mean, we've got a mutual friend for whom this was the Petra album. So much so that when he discovered that I was in possession of your LPs, he got so excited and he wanted to borrow and hang on to the On Fire LP for a while. And he did, and he left it in the cab of his ute on a hot day, and he turned it into an ashtray.
I can never play it again.
And so when it comes down to it, Dave, Adam,
if you are listening, Adam, we do love you. We love you.
But you do owe Dave, right? On Fire on vinyl.
On LP, on vinyl, you do. Yeah, so I'm waiting for it still. Oh, but I mean, look, this is going to be exciting. I think the other thing that really makes this album exciting for me is that not only did I get this album so soon after it was released, but I also got to go and see Petra live when they toured Australia with the On Fire tour. And I'm so excited to be able to talk about that as we go. It was awesome. I was 13. It was a Saturday night. Our youth group went. I got to go. It was fantastic. And I can't wait. I'm going to share some of stories and memories. They're burned in my head. I can remember some of the stuff so clearly. And we're going to tie it into a lot of the songs as we go. And some of my memories are tied in with the key songs on this album. We'll talk about that as we go. But I'm really excited. That was in fact, this was the last time Petra toured Australia in 1989. The On Fire tour was the last time they toured Australia until the Farewell album was released. And they came out here again, which we managed to get to go and see together.
That was fun. That was a fun trip. But that's for a start. Give us one highlight of what it was for young Dave. Something that happened, something you saw, an interaction from the stage.
I'll share something from the tour and interaction from the stage. It's the irony is it's actually more relevant to what will be our next podcast. But during the concert, they actually announced that in a few weeks after the concert, was held, they were going to be releasing the Petra Praise album, The Rock Cries Out, which will be our next podcast. And during the concert, they did the songs, the two live songs that are on the Petra Praise album, and we'll talk about that again soon. But they did the round. They broke us all into the round, and we had the band were one side and John Schlitt was the other, and Ronnie Cates, who we'll talk about very shortly with a bit more detail. Ronnie Cates was just so full of energy. He was running around the stage, and he wears a microphone. He wears like the over-the-ear type microphone that I guess I'd like to say has probably been more made famous by in modern years by people like Britney Spears. You know, that little one that just sits over the ear and hangs off the side of the cheek. That was what he had. And he was running all in the crowd involved in the song and really building it up. And it really created a great atmosphere of worship when we did that song. And I guess that's a good place to introduce our newest band member.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're rolling out from This Means War, powerhouse album, solid new sound, delivered with such confidence, thanks in part to the contributions of our new producing team. And we thank the Elefantes for their work there. That sound very much carries into On Fire in a very confident way, which is awesome to see. But we get this one personnel change. We've said farewell to John Kelly and
Mark Kelly.
I always do that.
There are enough of the Johns. I mean, there's, you know, John Lowry, John Schlitt, yeah. John Kelly, John Hartman, and Johnny Weaver.
They may as well all be Johns. Anyway, so we've said farewell to Mark Kelly with a wistful tear. But yes, we're welcoming Ronnie Cates, Dave. How did he come to be a part of the Petra team?
So I listened earlier this year. I actually listened to a podcast. Ronnie Cates was interviewed by former White Hart member John Thorne. And Ronnie shared how he had traveled to Nashville, Tennessee. He was supposed to be auditioning for another Christian band. But when he got there, he moved to Nashville, Tennessee to audition for a band, and the audition fell through. Something went wrong, something changed, and the audition never ended up happening. And he was living in a building at the time, and he says someone in the building, it was a God moment, someone in the building came up to him one day and basically told him that Petra were auditioning for a new bass player and encouraged Ronnie to go and audition. And Ron says he auditioned, and next thing you know, he's the new bass player for Petra. Very different style, at least on this album, very different style to what we got from Mark Kelly. Mark Kelly had a lot of scales and runs and sort of movement with his bass playing, but Ronnie Cates really almost feels like a power bass player. A lot of highly driven bass stuff is what he was doing. He often played with a guitar pick, with a quite a thick guitar pick when he was playing to be able to move quickly on the string. And I guess the other thing that really stood out to me in the concert is Ronnie Cates was on stage wearing an Australina Kubra hat. Now, if you've seen the photos in the Petra Praise album, the Australina Kubra hat is very similar, I guess, to American cowboy hats, but it's a leather. It's got a certain look and style to it. And he actually said he bought it when they first arrived in the country and was intentionally wearing it because it was his Australian hat. So I always wonder if it was he actually used that hat in the photos. I don't know if it's the same hat, but I remember him sharing on stage how he bought that hat when he arrived. Of course, that got a big cheer from everyone in the crowd.
Way to support local industry, Ronnie. Appreciate that. For those of you who might be wondering a little bit, Indiana Jones hat is officially an Australian style a Kubra fedora, but that's just to say that Australia makes everything better, and we contribute to the betterment of all of American culture. So. Absolutely. You're welcome.
Don't send us any hate mail.
They won't, mate. They won't.
No.
So, stage is set. On fire, Dave.
Yeah, look, I think before we delve into the songs, I think the other thing that we need to talk about is I shared the cultural change that was happening at the time for the band. I was listening to an interview, here we go, earlier this year, I was listening to an interview with Bob Hartman, and Bob was sharing the journey of the band, and he said that it was the On Fire tour in which point the band truly became accepted by the mainstream church. He shared during the tour in America, they were touring with a prominent Christian speaker by the name of Josh McDowell. It was the Why Wait campaign. And what was happening is they go into the different areas and they normally meet with the pastors and youth pastors of the city. And traditionally the pastors and the youth pastors, or maybe not so much the youth pastors, but the pastors had been very standoffish and wary of the ministry of Petra. And here's Josh McDowell not just touring with them, but promoting the message that they were sharing, really talking up the message. And Bob said that it was basically Josh McDowell's seal of approval that led to many of these churches who had previously campaigned against Christian music. You know, it was rock music. Rock music is the devil. How can you be? You can't be Christians if you play this music. It was at this time that Petra truly became, in his mind, accepted by the mainstream church. So I think that maybe even had a bit to do with the energy that really starts to filter in, because this album is full of energy.
Oh, yes.
It is full of energy. We have a sound that is fully realized. Now we've really moved away from these keyboard-led elements to Petra really being strongly guitar-led. Bob's guitars lead the songs. They drive the songs. And John Lowry's keys provide atmosphere and an underneath element to them that previously it was probably a more featured instrument. I think it starts to take a – backseat's probably not the right word for it, but they look at ways of utilizing the keys in varied ways – and letting the guitar really drive most of the songs now. And it's this style that we see going right through to, you know, No Doubt and even Petra Praise 2. So
yeah, that's right.
It's something that really sits. This is the sound of the modern Petra in my, as I said before. So, and we're going to see it a lot as we look at each of these songs tonight.
Well, that's it. Well, straight into it with confidence, with boldness, with force, all fired up. Everyone just screams in together about being fired up. And as you say, that guitar ushers in this new sound, or this fully realized sound for the band. Real crunchy guitar noise, you know, that real sort of basic riff, but heavy on the drum beat. And then, look, even when it comes to when the bass comes in, you know, you were talking a moment ago about Ronnie Cates having a different sound. You get to the lead into the first verse and you've got that bass sound going dong, 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 you know?
Yeah.
You know, very, very grounded and driving and energetic, but yeah, I mean, it's coming out of the gate running with this song. It really is.
Yeah, it literally gets you fired up for this album. I mean, the song says we're all fired up, and this song gets you fired up. That driving sound, the guitars, the supporting keys underneath, and what I found interesting is they really limit the use of the backing vocals in this song, but it adds so much. The backing vocals basically do the I'm all fired up. Yeah, the fired up at the start and then I'm all fired up. It's sort of, that's all it is. The rest of it, it's John Schlitt's vocals really pumping out and hitting a real power to it. You know, it just hits hard and keeps going. I'll share that this is the, and you talked about the start, the fired up, and then the song comes in, the music comes in. When we were at the concert, they launched the concert with this song. And I remember it so clearly because, you know, we'd had our lead up act and they cleared the stage and we're all ready to go, and the lights dropped down. So everyone's starting to get, you know, here we go. The lights have dropped off, and the fired up line hits and the lights blare on, but there's no one on stage. And then the lights shut off again. And then it happened a second time. So obviously they were playing the recorded fired up. Then it happened a second time and all the lights come on. There's no one on stage and they drop off again. And then you get the third one fired up. And this time the lights come on and the band are all in place on the stage. And Bob takes off. And it was just such a great launch to the concert, you know. And there's a 13-year-old, I'm like, where'd they come from? Now, obviously, they would have been just hiding out of the way, quickly rush on stage. I know that's how it works, but it really was a fantastic way to start a concert and launch into this fantastic event. And it gets you fired up. This song gets me fired up. I love the line, the church is stirring and it's going to keep occurring. Two are all baptized in the holy fire. It really is, even thematically, we're talking about being fired up for God. And I think this album and this song lays a framework for the whole album. Bob Hartman's writing here, this is energizing the church. We're getting fired up. We want God to empower us. We want to be impacting the world for God. We want to be doing things that are going to make an impact. And I just think the words are so poignant and so impactful that it can't do anything but stir you up. If you have genuine love for God, you are going to be stirred up spiritually by this song.
There's such a John's vocals, particularly in this song, are such a, they're so energetic, and you know, it feels like, I mean, if I were to try singing this song, I would feel like I'd run a marathon at the end of it. This is an exhausting song to try and keep up with. So heavens knows how John Schlitt managed to, you know, not just keep up, but, you know, hit those high notes, hit them loud, keep the momentum going and still make everything clear. But it is that really awesome, you know, again, you know, Petra has always had this thing about writing songs that are a source of encouragement or inspiration for the weary Christian. Almost in anticipating, you know, the listener being weary before they even put the album on. This album starts up with a wake-up call like nothing else.
And like I was saying, not just a musical wake-up call, but a spiritual wake-up call. And it's a journey that they start again. We get these journeys, and we're going to see throughout this album how they're really tying into this idea of really getting yourself going for God and really wanting to have an impact for God.
Well, we roll from there into Hit You Where You Live, which is one of those rare Petra beasts in that it was a song that is co-written. And in this case, you know, we're assuming lyrics by Bob Hartman, but music, interestingly here, by Billy Smiley. And Dino Elefante.
Billy Smiley of Whiteheart.
Was he at Whiteheart at this time?
Billy Smiley was a founding member of Whiteheart. But it's interesting because this starts a series of albums where there's a constant link to Whiteheart. I honestly don't know. Maybe there are some listeners out there that know more. I don't know if there was a closer relationship in the US between Whiteheart and Petra. Maybe they toured a bit. I don't know. Maybe they had similar management, or there was some relationship between some of the members of the band. But you know, we get it. We get a journey of several albums where different members of Whiteheart are involved in some elements of the writing, and it's only musical here. The words are all by Bob, but I love the start of this album. The drum intro is just so awesome. Get this really solid drum intro, and then the guitar riff, Bob's guitar riff. And then everyone else starts coming in under it. The bass guitar and the keys start filling out the sound, but it really sets this amazing foundation. It's a great production, the start of this song. I really felt it's a really great production.
It is. That's right. And it's all contributing, I mean, again, to another song of encouragement and inspiration. Almost that call to the believer to just hang in there. But in this case,
Bob says that actually part of the underlying theme of this song is the idea that there are times where God has to discipline his people or train his people. They go through a time of testing or whatever, and he's gonna hit you where you live. It's the term of basically like smack you in the face, like wake up. You maybe something hasn't been going right, maybe you haven't been doing the right thing, but bang, I'm gonna hit you where you live. Once you get hit by God, where you're at, everything's gonna change. And it ties in to the theme of the album, because you get the line later on, it's his desire to set your life on fire. So God wants us to be on fire spiritually, and sometimes we need a wake-up call. Sometimes we need to perhaps be disciplined, or maybe we've gone a little bit off track and we need to be turned around. Maybe we've got a little bit apathetic and God needs to wake us up. But it really is that idea of, he's going to hit you where you live, and once he does, you're not going to be able to hold back anymore. You're struck by his love. You're going to know things are different. And as a result, your life is going to be different. So let him do it. Let him do it when he needs to.
Yeah. And as with all sort of best theology and doctrine, the purpose of this ultimately rolling out is in the testimony that it becomes to the world around you. And that's, that wonderful bridge, in here, it's almost like a bit of a reprieve from the intensity of the song, but a lost and dying world is dying to know he lives. The only way they'll know what he has to give is when we're hit where we live. That call to live with conviction, to live with integrity. People are watching what we do more than they're listening to what we say.
I think this is totally agree. And that little reprieve for a minute gets you ready for a build, and bam, we get one of Bob's great guitar solos. It's powering out, and it leads back into that massive thing. And the interesting thing about this song is that the driving of the bass through the song really pumps the pace of the song. It really helps keep the song going. I used to think that we really heard a lot of what Mark Kelly used to do with his bass. And I always thought the early albums of Ronnie Cates, was he even in there? Did they even include him? But as I listened to this album in preparation for our recording, I was really tuning into what Ronnie was doing. And as I said, Ronnie brings this drive and this pace, and this song really benefits from it, because it's not actually, timing-wise, it's not the quickest of songs in terms of how it's paced, but the drive is consistent because I think Ronnie's bass keeps it going. At times, because of the drum technique that's being used and the guitar riff that's being played, it's a little bit offbeat and a little bit quite, not quite, you know, a pumping sound, and it's the bass that keeps it moving.
No, that's absolutely right. Interesting, you know, reflection, you know, I suppose because John Elefante was working there and he's, you know, inextricably tied with the band, you can get that consistency in the sound. But it sounds like the kind of music that Bob Hartman writes. It doesn't sound out of place in any way as a Petra song. So just interesting that that's, you know, they're guest writers. But again, you know, certainly John and Dino have a really good track record working with the band in producing great music.
That's right. Absolutely.
So we roll on into Minefield. This is, I find this a really, really interesting song. Really kind of, I feel it's kind of a bit bizarre in a number of ways. I don't know. How do you feel about Minefield?
Well, the first thing I wondered is if this song may have actually been the first song written for this album, because it almost feels like this song would fit better into This Means War.
Mm.
The theme of this song, the everywhere you step, you know, you've got to be careful where you're stepping because life is a minefield. You got that, getting that war element back to it. You know, even the lyrics, smell the burning powder. There's danger in the air. You know, the enemy's watching. It really has a lot of similarities thematically to This Means War. So I wonder if it was the first song. Maybe it was the first song written. Bob was writing it maybe while they were touring early on with This Means War and held on to it for later. I'm just theorizing, speculating. Look, for me, I quite like this song. I feel at the start of this song, it's almost John Schlitt's Chameleon. We talked back when we were looking at Never Say Die about Chameleon, how Greg X. Viles has this wail at the start of Chameleon in the riff. Here you've got basically the two beats, bang, bang, and John Schlitt just hits his wail to start the song. And then you get that drive. Dun, 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 dun. So it's sort of, again, it's not super fast, but it's a real pounding song.
It really is. And, there's a war beat to the song. Which, you know, and it's a cautionary song. It's a warning. I mean, it's that warning to continue to take the reality of life seriously, even life as a believer. You know, certainly, in contrast to the assumption sometimes that life as a believer should be fine and dandy. God should protect us from all harm. Well, no, that's not the case. This is the first place sort of I've ever heard that, you know, going so far as to paint that imagery of, no, life's still a minefield, man. You step in the wrong spot, and you will be hurt more than you can imagine.
And I think it's a good warning because, you know, as we're getting fired up for God, as we're letting God refine us and transform us, the enemy is not going to like it. The enemy is going to come for us. And I think that's where it really fits into this theme. It's this journey again. We're going to get fired up for God. Let him refine you because you're going to have a bigger impact to the world as you get fired up. But be aware, be alert. The enemy is going to come for you. You're a target now. And so, you know, be aware. You know, don't take your eyes off what's happening. Make sure you're protected. And trust in God to get you through this. Yeah. I think is that big key. Another real powerful message to encourage Christians in their journey just to keep their eyes on our Father in heaven.
Now this is, I mean, it feels a little bit more like there's a chorus of voices at work, a bit more featured than the other songs as well, which adds a night, like really, really adds to the atmosphere of it.
Not too much. Not too much, but just enough.
I think that's the case for most songs on this album. Is just right. is pretty much and the word.
And it's also the first song we get. We get our first musical interlude. We get a keys element leading into the coda. And then we get our guitar song. So we'll get that double musical element. We get the keys, and then the guitar solo pumps. And I actually reckon this is probably the best guitar solo of the first three songs. So Bob's just taking it to another level with his individual forming, because I really felt this was the most technically good, like real, what he was doing in the solo was probably the best of all three of these first songs.
Yeah. I gotta say, I feel like that the when the keys come in with that bit, the keyboard, sort of the solo lead-in part, it sounds like the Final Countdown.
Yes, it does have a little bit of that feel to it.
So we know we're solidly in the 80s. But you know, there's no bones about the fact that's the market that Petra are aiming at now in this era. It's where Bob feels comfortable writing, and this group, you know, this band have clearly got a good mix for that kind of sound.
Absolutely.
We roll into our ballad of the album, and I was almost gonna say our only ballad of this album, and then I realized no, there is another one that I always forget about. But we'll get to that.
But this is a beautiful ballad. This is an amazing song.
Absolutely,
this one really.
This is a contender, like against both of the ballads from This Means War. And I've got soft spots for those, but I think this might be my favorite ballad of this era of Petra.
This is a powerful song.
It is. This one's, it's less saccharine than the ones on This Means War were, to an extent. It's a little harder edged in the musical arrangement. It's a little more up tempo, but it's still, it's a beautiful, beautiful message. Another one of those ones. I was going to say, it's another one of those ones where I feel like John Schlitt's personal journey lends an extra depth to the message of the song, his conviction in singing a song like this of gratefulness and thankfulness to God for his part.
Yeah, the vocals are just fantastic. He really just, he doesn't go too hard. But it is just real, real heart feeling in this song. I really feel this song, there's a lot of focus. John Lowry is playing, he's obviously had to layer the recording because there's two or three keyboard sounds and feels that are filling out this song. But it is the John show, because it's John Schlitt, John Lowry. There is not a guitar in sight in this whole song. Louis is just playing a tambourine and keeping it very simple. But in its simplicity, there is depth and layering, creating an atmosphere. And we're getting into that idea that the first love, the message in Revelation, not to forsake your first love. And you really feel they're creating that atmosphere. You get the idea of the heavenly hosts and the angels surrounding the throne, and I almost feel the sound, the feeling that they create with the layering of the keys creates that heavenly feel and really lays that foundation. I think it's a beautiful ballad. I love the message of it. And again, getting back to your first love, that's what it means to get all fired up. You want to be all fired up, you need to look back to get back to that first love, to get back to the heart and what really brought you after God. And we need to be longing for him and chasing after him. And the world is going to try and pull us away. It's going to try and seduce our affections. And we know we shouldn't be heading in that direction. There's a real acknowledgement. We need to keep working. We are weak. We are human. But God, I want you. And that heart is just, yeah, it just keeps coming through. And it's probably, like you said, in my mind, it's John Schlitt's best ballad to date. I really love how there's no intro in this song. They're just straight into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes I feel I'm pulled.
That's a hard thing to pull off in a song. Sometimes it is exactly the right choice, and this is that one of those times. But that's a hard thing to be saying, everyone, we're just in together, let's go. There's no lead-in, there's no setup, there's no creating the atmosphere. We just got to trust that everyone's going to be along as soon as we get into this. But you know, they do it well. I mean, look, it's a seasoned band. They know each other. They're working well together. Mm.
Yeah, well, let me share some live experiences. I actually should have shared one on the previous song, so I'll come back to that in just a second. But for First Love, I just remember so clearly. It was almost like they backed everything off and they just had the light spotlight. John Schlitt was standing just near John Lowry. Like it was almost like they could just had this one spotlight on the two of them. And you know, they were quite close in where they were standing as they performed this song, as John Schlitt really sang this song. And I just remember that quite memorable because the heart was just coming out there. If we go back to our previous song, Minefield, the thing that I didn't mention, I remember when they started Minefield, they took all the lights down and they created an atmosphere of a battleground. They had a machine gun starting to flare off and the lights flickering like there was machine gun battles and bombs exploding. And then, you know, sort of they had this massive explosion and then the drum beat, boom, boom, and the wail went in. So they were really fitting the atmosphere of what they were trying to create with the performance into what the messages of the songs were.
That's really awesome, man. Man, I'm bummed that I never made it out there now. Well, we roll into, another really interesting song. I might be starting to say this a lot from now on. I find Defector to be a little odd in a few ways. Not bad, just odd. This is one that I feel I'm kind of have a hard time getting a bead on what might have been going through Bob's mind when he wrote this. But it's, if I'm getting it right, Defector is a song, it's basically about praising a new Christian for becoming a new Christian and turning away from the old life, framed in terms of again the warfare setting. This album, actually, some of the songs lean heavier into that spiritual warfare language than This Means War did, and this is one of them. It's very much using that language of you were on the enemy's side, now you're a defector, and that's a good thing. Typically, defector, real negative. Real negative connotation. We never use it in an encouraging way. But Bob Hartman has this thing of sometimes whole song can be built around taking a phrase that has a negative connotation and reframing it in a positive way. This is kind of one of those times, I suppose.
Yeah, look, I look at this song not so much as turning your back on the enemy, but getting out of the influence of the world. You used to play their game. You used to stay the same. They're trying to hold you back. They thought they had a hold on you. I really feel, I mean, yes, it's like the enemy has authority or control or power in the world, but I really feel it's that turning away from the influence of the world. You've got away from them. And I think it's something, it can be that challenge to even some Christians. Maybe you've been drawn back in, but you know the best, you used to play that game. You need to remember not to go back there. So yeah, look, I quite like the start of this song. It pumps, it drives, the guitar goes, the bass is going, there's layering, there's driving. And I think this is Ronnie Caetz's first real shine. He gets some real, real highlight moments in this song. It feels like the movement of this song feels like someone is trying to escape from being held back by something. So basically, the feel of this song fits that concept of defecting, getting away from that way of life or that stranglehold and moving into the new life. So I think that feel gets to it. I really love, you get a lot in the chorus. You get the sort of the backing vocals hit that defector, and then you get these power chords, bah, 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 while the keyboard's playing sort of a running sound underneath it. Yeah, it feels like someone's running and the power chord's coming out. It really creates that feel.
Yeah, it's got that great chorus use, like, of these, you know, the 80s, I mean, you know, hair metal bands were doing it, glam rock, but that thing of the chorus, you know, sings the theme note the vocal chorus sing the theme note of the chorus, that opening word, the line, in this case, defector, and the lead singer responds to the chorus. It's a wonderful musical device for these kinds of rock songs. It's in great use here in this song.
It's probably the heaviest song that I think Petra have ever put out to date. Like, you use the term hair metal for me. I mean, it's not a metal song, but this is probably the hardest rock I've heard them produce to date.
I agree, and it's right in line with you know, things that groups like, you know, I'd go as far to say Poison or Bon Jovi or, you know, any of those groups that were putting out this harder edge. But this is definitely, it's one of the faster paced songs on this album. Real heavy drive, real solid sound.
You almost get at the end of the song, you almost get a little bit Striperish, because you've got the guitar power chords playing away, and at the same time Bob is playing, as the song is finishing, he's playing this lead riff, wailing away on this lead riff underneath as well, and sort of that dueling guitar feel is almost brought in for a moment. And there's one thing that I really like just at the back end in the coda, you got away clean but it didn't come free, and another man paid with his own agony for freedom. And all I think about when I hear that, it's almost like William Wallace in Braveheart screaming out freedom. They didn't do this song when I saw them live. They didn't perform this song, but I would have loved to have seen John Schlitt launching out that freedom line. It would have been fantastic to see. It would have been
something. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Like that final bridge. That's kind of, for me, without that, I would remain in a place of being a little puzzled. Like I said, I'm not sure who this song is for, but you get to that bridge and you remind the person, look, everything that you are enjoying, the freedom that you have now, remember there was a price for it. So it's good to feel good about getting out from that life, but remember what it cost. And like it's one of those cases where just almost one line provides a context for an entire song that, and this is more of a personal reflection, but it makes the song for me. Just that final piece that goes in there. Real solid entry into the album and into Petra's, into the Petra legacy there. Roll from that into the
beginning of side B.
The beginning of side B. The officially the non John the non is I'm stuck on John now, Dave. I'm gonna
well John you know, John wrote it.
John wrote it. I meant the non Bob song. The
it's the first time we've had a non Bob song in a long time.
It's been a while. But this one, Council of the Holy. Now, in prep for this episode, you know, doing a bit of looking at what's available online, I stumbled on YouTube across the Petra On Fire video experience, which was a VHS resource that they developed, which I didn't watch the whole thing.
It was to tie in with the Josh McDowell. It was all part of the Josh McDowell stuff. Yeah.
All right. Well, that lends a bit more explanation to it. But I didn't watch the whole thing. But you know, I assume it for those of you that might not have seen it. If you have, share some memories about your experiences with this. But there were sections which had questions about the themes and the issues that were raised in the songs on this album. There were most prominently, though, there are a series of film clips that were recorded. Council of the Holy is the second song to feature in this VHS experience. And the video clip to it is so wonderfully 80s Christian earnestness that it opens with a guy getting beat up at school by bullies, clearly, whose Christian friend then comes and invites him to a study group at what I thought was a pub. So I'm not quite sure what's going on here, but the youth pastor leaves the guy with a Bible, and then the entire rest of the film clip is this guy reading this Bible in all different settings, basically never putting it down. He's sitting in the back of a pickup truck reading his Bible. He's at the library surrounded by piles of books, but he's reading his Bible. He's laying down on his couch and he's reading his Bible. He's in his bed at night and the last thing he's doing is reading his Bible, and then he turns the light out. And then it plays into, like, you know, now he goes and he confronts worldly situations and he's responding differently to them. It made me laugh. I personally don't look, you know what, people may have had really good responses and these things may have been important tools to people in the day, so I won't make too much fun of them. Other than to say, I think
it doesn't quite hold up to the test of time. Is that what we're saying?
They date strongly. But this song, Council of the Holy, it's kind of a kick-ass song. It really is. Basically, I mean, you know, that video clip does sum it up. The whole thing is, it's a love. It is a hardcore love song for the Word of God. The Council of the Holy, the living Word of God. It's a song about how awesome the Bible is. And you know what? I'm never going to have a bad word for a song that's about that. So that's probably the end really of my input.
I really love the dynamics of this song. You get that pounding start, you know, driving and marching feel, and then it all backs off. You get this acoustic guitar feel for the verse. You know, there is a light, and it really is. It's like the light's breaking through. We're just breaking in with a little bit of music, And in the chorus, bang, there we are again. You know, Counselor Holy. We get the power hit, the rock hit comes out. And then the second verse is backed off a little bit again, not too much. But it just, yeah, it really, this was a song that I, for some reason, when we were thinking ahead and getting ready for this before I'd started my listening, and for the benefit of those listening, what I'm doing is I'm trying to hold off listening to any of the albums again until, like, I'm listening to each album only when we're preparing for the podcast. And I've heard this album so many times. I literally can just think this album. I can hear all the music, all the style in my head. But for some reason, I had a little bit of a lower opinion of Counselor of the Holy until I started listening to it again for preparing for this podcast. And it really impacted me again. It is a good rock song. It is, there's power in it. The lyrics talk about the value of the word and the need to stay close to God. If you want to be fired up for God, you need to be living in the word and letting the word of God counsel you and guide you and direct your journey of life. And it really needs to be the chorus, the coda uses the line, more precious than rubies, more precious than gold. I feel, and I know it wasn't at the time, but the Lord of the Rings movie where Gollum sits there and goes, my precious. It's really that feel. We should be clinging to the Bible. This is our precious. This should be everything to us. And it's this song really promotes that. And I love it. It's just got a really tight finish, you know, sort of, you don't have one of these fades out. It nails it with a really bang.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's even got that like a powerful intro into it as well. There's a, this is one where, you know, the intro duties of the song are kind of shared between Bob on guitar and John on the keys. The key sound that he creates this almost like a church organ, a cathedral organ,
yeah,
contributing to this song, which, yeah, you know, is kind of appropriate for the theme where they're going. But it's look, yeah, it's this song featured heavily on the Rock Block, which was the compilation album that I had for the longest time. It's solid. It's great. I really dig it. Words and music, John Lowry and Danny Kingan, who, you know what, I know that we've had him on before, but I can't remember what other song he wrote. He wrote one other Petra song.
I can't remember what it was.
I can't remember what it is offhand. So someone help us out.
But look, while we're here, because our lists are getting quite long at the moment, while we're here, this is the only non-Bob Hartman song on this album. So I've brought up our list of non-Bob Hartman songs in our top. We've got 15 songs to date where Bob Hartman was not involved in the writing of the song. Where does Counselor of the Holy fit in terms of this? I'm going to read out the list. This is the list. I'm just going to start at the top. We'll start at number one. Currently at number one on this list is Road to Zion. We've got The Coloring Song, Mary's Song, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, Not by Sight. And then we've got the Greg X. Vols trilogy, Praise the Lord, Let Everything That Hath Breath, Without Him We Can Do Nothing, Occupy, and Magic Words. And then at the bottom of the end of the list, we've got Without Him I Would Surely Die, Wake Up, Sally, I'm Not Ashamed, and Woman, Don't You Know. How do you feel John Lowry's first full entry into Petra's discography sits?
I don't know, man. It's pretty solid, isn't it? I'm probably putting it at that upper tier of the list.
Well, how do you compare? If we're talking about rock songs, we've got God Gave Rock and Roll to You up in that top list, and this was the original recording of it off the Come and Join Us album. Yeah. How do you compare Counselor Holy to God Gave Rock and Roll to You?
I it doesn't have that same iconic quality to it. So it probably sits
underneath it. We've got a John Slick's Not By Sight.
I'd say it's of a level. It's certainly on at least on par with Not By Sight. I might even slide it in above there.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably where it would fit too. I think the power of this song, I think that the lyrics of this song may be a little bit tighter than Not By Sight. And we've get the message of this. I mean, they've both got good messages, but I think the musical variations in this song probably help it a little bit to create a bit of variation as opposed to Not By Sight. So there we go, everyone. Council of the Holy jumps in at number 5 on the list of songs not written by Bob Hartman. Now, back to the album.
And back to what is a hair's breadth away from being the goofiest song on this album. And it may be a surprise that I use that there, but this, it's, I like it. I really do. But the line in the chorus always makes me want to laugh a little bit.
Which line in the chorus?
It'll either be you and me, or it's going to be a rock or tree.
Bible says all of creation will cry out to him.
I know, David. I'm not denying that. I'm simply saying it's a little bit of a goofy line. It's fun. It's a good song.
I feel that this song is a song that you could almost see pitching to a church, and I think there was some intent with this song. This song is structured pretty much like a praise and worship song from the 80s.
Yes.
You actually start with the chorus. The song starts with the chorus. Then it goes into the verses and back to the chorus. And the lyrics are simple. They're biblical. Mm-hmm. And it is a song of praise and worship. Somebody's going to praise his name. Somebody's going to call him Lord. And it's got a foundation. And it's the song. This is the song that became this generation of Petras. This laid the foundation for what became the worship bracket of their concerts. When I was there live, they did this song, and they started it very similar to how it starts here. In fact, they probably started it more laid back than they do on the album, but really sort of when they did it live, it really started like, somebody's gonna praise his name, and just holding it and dragging, not dragging is not the right word, but drawing that first chorus out and then building it up. And then what they would do is they would move from there into I Will Call Upon the Lord, which is on our next album. And then they would come back to the chorus of Somebody's Going to Praise His Name. Then if I remember my concert correctly, they actually did a little bit of, I think it was Praise You the Lord. Out of the earlier album. Then they came back to Somebody's Going to Praise His Name. Then they launched into, they would talk about how the different instruments are going to praise God, and they would do their guitar the solo and the bass solo, the drums and the keyboards all have their solo parts. And then they come back to Somebody's Going to Praise His Name. Then they finished the song and they went into We Exalt Thee. And I remember that so clearly because, you know, it was we sang it in church. You know, everyone was worship. Everyone had their hands lifted up to God. It was a worship time. And they finished We Exalt Thee and they launched into Somebody's Going to Praise His Name. So this song really formed the foundation of a portion of their concert that was lifting God's name up in praise and worship. It pretty much is the new Greg X Vols praise medley off Captured in Time and Space, right, is the best comparison I make to it. And I think it's done intentionally too. I think they already had their sight on they were going to release this out this praise album next. And so I wonder if there was some intention in preparing us for that and getting it ready. So, you know, it's an enjoyable song. Like you said, the lyrics I think are designed to be simple and easily accessible to everyone. It's like I said, structured like a church chorus. The verses supplement the chorus. You get the echo in the chorus, which you get in a lot of church music. There's some good guitar solo in there. It's technically good, and I love how at the end of the song they backs right off, and you feel like you're entering the presence of God. That feeling of everything, that keyboard element where you're almost like you're entering into the throne room. That's how I feel about this song. I really enjoyed it.
I wish that we had had someone in charge of church music who was hip and with it enough to have wanted to try and bring this song into church. I would have had a blast as a kid singing this song. As it is, I feel like it's one that, you know, I kind of came to later in life. This is one that it's not a song that I remember hearing as a kid, but I know that I would have responded to it so well. I would have thought this would just have been the coolest thing ever and we should sing it all the time. You know, you're absolutely right. And particularly that thing of, you know, it being, you know, structured like a worship song of that time, which the Greg X Vols songs I don't think were, as much as I love them, as much as I think they're great.
No, they were more, yeah, like they were more regular songs that had a praising God element to them. But this feels like a worship song.
Yeah. So we roll from Somebody's Gonna Praise His Name into Open Book, which you could say carrying on the trend. Like I feel like Petra typically, when they're constructing their albums, whether they're aware of it or not, we've certainly made a point how you know side B's tend to be slightly weaker than side A's in general, but also particularly the next to last songs tend to be the ones on the album that just, and I don't think this is just a filler song, but it's kind of tiptoeing in that direction. It just doesn't have as much presence on this
it's
album.
Like a, I've noted down, it's almost like a driving ballad. It's not full rock, but it's not a ballad either. It's sort of an in-between sort of song, and again the guitars are less, it's almost a bit of a throwback, it's almost got a bit of a sort of back to the street sound. The guitars are a little less featured, the keyboard's a bit more prominent, lots of pads sort of underneath filling out. So yeah, it is a very different song. It's got a great message, the message that God knows our life, and God has you know has a plan for us and wants to use us, and you know we can see that His love is binding us together. The message of this song is really beautiful, and the desire within us that you know we hope God finds our life has been worth the reading. I mean the lyrics got some nice real foundation there. I, you know, when the cover of my book, the book is closed, the final chapter read, "I hope you find it worth the reading. I hope well done is said." You know, it really has that. I want to live my life in a way that honors God. I want to live my life in a way that pleases Him. Lord, you know what's going on. You know my life. You've written the pages. You read the pages. And there's almost, let me in on the seat. Let me in, God. I want to know what you know. I want to know where you're going. It's that feeling of, maybe a lot of us probably feel like that in the world today, all this COVID stuff and lockdowns and restrictions and social distancing and all that. You know, we want, God, what's going to happen at the end? We want to know the outcome. And that feeling, you know, asking God to show us. That's.
I also see that reading of it where it's, you know, Lord, look at me. You know, this, it, more the Psalm 149, you know, look at me and tell me if I am pleasing. See if there is any offensive way in me, you know. As you read the pages of my heart, please tell me what you see. I read it also as a, you know, are you liking it, Lord? Or is there something you would like me to change? I kind of get the impression with this song, it feels like something that, at least at the time, might have been personally very resonant with Bob Hartman. It has the hallmarks of that kind of a wrangling, and whether this came from these particular scripture readings he was doing and what he was working with at the time or not, I don't know that the fullness of that, you know, that's just an inkling I have when I listen to the song and I read the lyrics. Yeah, but it is really nice. And I guess we're at this place where it's nice to be able to say the weaker entries on the album, I don't really have anything bad to say about them.
No, they're still really, really good. Solid
songs. You know, yeah. And this is a nice one. This is a lovely one. I think a little bit stronger than its follow-up, Stand in the Gap. We may disagree on that a little bit. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we might. Look, I think, Stand in the Gap is, I think we get a real hit back with our music here. I think, you know, we're really back into some power chords and some driving again. John Lowry brings a great deal of variety. He uses a lot of varied sounds in this song. And then you get these some guitar launching in the coda, and then we back off a little bit, and then we build back in again, and we back off. So there's a lot of musical dynamics going on in this album. And look, again, the call in this song, you know, Stand in the Gap, you know, we as Christians, you know, we need to be supporting our brothers and our sisters in Christ. You know, when they're struggling, we need to be praying for them. We need to be the one who is coming to God and falling on our knees and saying, you know, we're going to pray for you and we're going to support you, especially when you're going through a tough time. You know, we're going to be the ones who come together. You know, the Bible talks about, you know, lyrically, he refers to the prayer of a righteous man. You know, the fervent prayer, coming together, pray for those who need healing, pray for those who are sick, and really come together. That's what I feel is that message of this song. It's yeah, look, I don't mind this song at all. I think it's quite a solid outing.
Yeah, it's, look, I mean, yeah, again, as I said, it's, if I had a problem with it, I would say, and I don't. It's, I kind of feel like it's, other songs that they've done cover this ground a bit better than this one, might be all that it is. But I do like, this is another example where the vocal chorus interacting with John as the lead vocalist is very effective. And there's a lot of energy to the song that I like. It's certainly a good way to be sort of starting to wrap up this album. I think it's a good placement. I don't think you want a song like this any earlier. I find the lyrics of this one a little harder to follow when I'm listening to the song than I do others. And I think part of what serves this album so well is that certainly those early songs, you can really follow those lyrics quite easily. They're quite clear and they're coming through, but still solid entry. It's a solid 7 of a song, 7 out of 10. So, we come to the wrap up now, and this is one that in the past I have often tuned this song out, because on my best days I have absolutely no interest in songs of patriotism, and I have even less room for songs of patriotism that work their way into spiritual things. And I can already feel people out there's blood boiling as they're raging at me about the point of what this song is actually about. So just bear with me. Hold on, folks. This is why I tend to have tuned it out, because I wasn't listening to the lyrics. I remember that refrain, "Under the Red, White, and Blue," and I'm like, that's enough, I'm done. Listening to it really carefully over these last couple of weeks, obviously that's been completely turned around. But what hits me the most, I almost feel like this song is satire, because it is so perfectly the style of song that those American patriotic songs sound like. It sounds like the kind of saccharine, flag waving, hand over your heart, God bless America songs. You kind of think the stereotype, the cliche of those kind of songs. It sounds like that. But then you actually listen to the lyrics and it's like saying, hey, America, you're not doing good enough. And that's really come through more clearly. Like, I've finally listened to that message and gone, oh, wow, hang on a second. I've been missing out on gold here. Like I said, the song almost steps into being satirical because of that. But the message of the song is actually quite poignant. It's quite strong. I admire that. I think it is a vital social issue that has never gone away. And so this song remains something that could be relevant and poignant today.
I think it's a real good follow-up. You talk about the social issue.
Mm.
It's very much, I feel it's very much a follow-up to what's it off, off Beat the System, off Hollow Eyes.
Hollow Eyes, yeah.
Because Hollow Eyes was about, all these, these other nations, we need to be reaching out and supporting these people in third world nations. And then we come to this song, it's like, where are the Amboys going? We give stuff away, we give stuff overseas. We've done the Hollow Eyes, we've done the Farm Aid and the Live Aid. But what about the homeless people in our own country, the people just around the corner and just down the street? It really, the whole sheep and the goats, what are you doing for the person who needs somewhere to sleep? And I think it's a real powerful call. If you're on fire for God, if you're trying to do what God wants you to do, guys, turn around and look in your own backyard. Are there people who need help right in your own street? And, yeah, the message I think is quite very much that slap in your face. Guys, we need to deal with our own backyard, not just praise ourselves for having helped people overseas.
Yeah. To be clear, I'm sure, like, there is a version of this song to be sung that goes under the Southern Cross. We're not engaging in USA bashing here. This is a social issue that Australia is just as guilty of letting go unanswered, and the Australian church doesn't do enough about. So
probably more so. I mean, at least you hear of areas and churches in America actively trying to support homeless people. Unfortunately, that's not as common in the mainstream church in Australia. There are elements, there are churches that do stuff down here, but I mean, the homelessness, look, where I live in New South Wales, in Australia, where I live, there's a lot of need for refuges. There's a lot of homeless people. I don't know of any church on the Central Coast that's actively involved, where I live, actively involved in trying to help these people. These refuges are government run or charity run, with very little input or involvement from church. So I would say Australia is probably more guilty of not doing this.
It's a song that addresses that issue really, really well. The fact that it uses the trappings I find this interesting. This is another one. It's a collaborative song. John Lowry contributes to the music.
Oh my goodness, does he contribute? It's a John Lowry showpiece. The yes. Keyboard stuff he is doing in this is amazing.
It is, but it's interesting. John Lowry seems to have this particular involvement with songs of Petra's that touch on these social issues. Clearly something close to his heart in all of that. But yeah, it's the use of that kind of a song that tearjerker, be proud to be an American style of song to address a place in which more needs to be done, or we need to not forget about the people in need on the doorstep. It's good. It's solid. Kind of like Hollow Eyes, though. It has this slight element of feeling like, I'm not going to say that it doesn't quite feel like a Petra song, but it does feel very different to all other Petra songs. Yeah. There's something that makes it distinct in its sound and in its style. And it's probably, it could be intentional that, we want these ones to stand a bit apart. Those are my reflections on Homeless View. Mm.
Yeah, look, I think I agree with you. I think we've pretty well said it all there. Like I said, this is a showpiece for John Lowry's keyboard playing, and it really stands out. He carries this song. I actually think he carries it more than John Schlitt's vocals do. And the message is clear. It's it doesn't push too much, but it's I had a similar attitude growing up. I struggled with the red, white, and blue idea, not being an American. Again, like you, listening to it for the prep, the real message of this song is just so powerful. And like I said before, this is the message of, if you're pumping for God, you're powering for God, realize that you need to be looking in your own backyard, and what can you do? God may just want you to be ministering and supporting people around the corner. So yeah. And there we go. We come to the end of this amazing album.
Such a solid solid album. I'm surprised at myself that I went for as long as I did with this being this gap, kind of like skipping straight from this. Because Petra Praise isn't a gap. Petra Praise, I have very clear memories of, even though I never listened to it as much. Such a like a, and I think it's that thing of we made a mention of back, like Never Say Die was an album that marked a dramatic change in style and direction for the band, which was good, but had its bumps. Then the follow-up, More Power to You, it was Never Say Die with confidence. Now, it's not quite the same because the word that we use for This Means War was perfect, a perfect album, and I stand by that. But On Fire has that same sense of, oh, we know what we're doing now. This Means War was like, we are going to give it everything we've got, and this might not work, but it does work, and it is awesome. Whereas On Fire is, we're coming in, we know what we're doing, we're just ready to have a great time, we're bringing the A game.
But I think where it differs from This Means War is I feel that the consistency from the beginning of the album to the end of the album is not quite there. The last couple of songs, just to me, those last three songs don't quite have the same power consistency that we seem to have on This Means War, where from beginning to end of the album, that album is just every song was solid, every song was awesome. And On Fire doesn't quite hit it in my mind. It's not quite as powerful as This Means War. Our new top 25 playlist, three songs have dropped off the bottom, and those three songs are Mary's Song, Killing My Old Man, and
No.
Angel of Light.
Oh my goodness. How could we have
So,
done this?
well, that's just how it's sitting.
And
Here's the list. Sorry, what were you going to
yeah,
say?
I was gonna say this whole list thing, like, it's a good thing that this is like a fluctuating and evolving thing because quite frankly, when songs now that songs are starting to drop off this at a higher rate, I don't like it. I don't like that we've put a limit on this anymore.
Maybe the 25 needs to spread out to a 30.
But yeah, I mean, we could argue in circles, but go on. How is the full list currently?
So starting at the bottom, number 25 is Hit You Where You Live. God Gave Rock and Roll to You is at 24. It's not going to make it much longer.
Nope.
I think in a couple of albums' time, we're going to see some serious damage done to this list. This Means War is at 23. Not By Sight is at 22. Bema Seat is at 21. At 20 is He Came, He Saw, He Conquered. At 19 is The Praise Medley from Captured in Time and Space, the Greg X. Viles trilogy. Coloring Song is above that, Road to Zion, and then More Power to You. At 15 is I Am Available, and First Love is now sitting at 14. Not of This World is at 13, Backsliding Blues is at 12, and All Over Me is at 11. In our top 10, Rose-Coloured Stained Glass Window is at 10, Taste and See is at 9, The Live Version of Clean is at 8, All Fired Up is at 7, Chameleon is at 6, and the top 5 remain unchanged: Yahweh Love, Adonai, Judas Kiss, It Is Finished Live, and the live version of Grave Robber. So there's our top 25. Slowly building. We'll start as we start to build the John Schlitt list. We'll start to look at that in a bit more detail later. But for now, that's our top 25 playlist. Put it together, have a listen. As I said, not next album, but the one after that, I think we're going to see some serious songs starting to drop off that list. It's going to be a very
Yes,
interesting journey.
I think so. Well, that's
Like I
been
said, we may need to do a top 30. We may need to build this out to a top 30 playlist.
Well, we'll have a conversation about that later. But that's been On Fire. This has been it's been great. One of This has probably been the best re-listen for me so far in doing this podcast. I've had the most newfound appreciation listening to this album again than the others, which has been great. It's been a joy. Unfortunately, have to report my little guy at home, not as much of a fan as of On Fire as he was of This Means War. So
that's all right. That's all right. We've got a few albums to go.
Well,
next time, I think it's going to be a very interesting journey next time, because we have something very different, something very unique.
Very different.
And I'm really looking forward to talking about the album that, as I said, when I was at the concert, I want to bring it back. I was at the concert and Petra announced that within a few weeks or a couple of months of the concert was held in September. I'm pretty certain. So I'm pretty certain the next album was out late October or early November. They announced that this next album would be coming out very shortly. And as I said, they several songs on this album were done as part of the concert. I really am looking forward to our look at Petra Praise, The Rock Cries Out.
Mm-hmm. So, and one that I have some fond memories of, and it's largely because a lot of them were songs that I well and truly recognized before listening to the album, because we sang them in church, and it's a right. thrill when your favorite rock band is singing the songs that you sing in church. So folks out there, if you've got memories of coming across Petra Praise, The Rock Cries Out for the first time, or because we probably will not do a separate episode for Petra en Albanza because we do not speak Spanish. No offense right. to any of our Spanish or Mexican brethren. Your experiences at those albums, whether they introduced you to new worship songs or whether they introduced you to a new way of doing them. As always, drop us a line, send us an email. You can reach us at wemeanrock@gmail.com, or you come along to our Facebook groups, our Facebook page, and you can comment anywhere on that page or send us messages through there. We love hearing from you guys. And even this time around, Dave, I don't know if you saw, but one of the guys who commented on our update, our latest post, had done an airbrushed, his own airbrushed version of the On Fire
I did see
cover
that.
Art.
I did
and
see
it
that.
Is
yes.
phenomenal. So just shout out to you, brother. You've got a gift there and it was gorgeous. Folks, keep interacting. We love hearing from you. Thank you so much for your encouragement. Those of you who have reached out just to check in and see how we're doing, it means a lot. We look forward to praising the Lord with you next time around as The Rock Cries Out.
It's sad when you come to the end of a concert and you have to walk out the door. It's sad when we come to the end of a podcast and we have to shut it down. But what's always exciting is we get to come back another time and do this all over again. And I'm looking forward to doing it again. So we look forward to you all joining us next time.
Well, thanks once more for tuning in. As always, this has been On Rock, a Petrospective. I'm Lindsay Hall.
And I'm Dave Hall.
We'll catch you next time.